Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 14th of October, recording at 9:36 p.m. and still British summertime. Now, first the highlights here today. Stock markets in general started off in a blaze of glory, but then gave up some of those gains. We still had pretty solid gains in most of the Asian markets. The biggest performer was Japan. But that's because it was closed yesterday, but it was up over 14% here today. And I see the Hang Seng ended up over 3%, and the Australian stock market index was up nearly 4%. Now, European markets were very strong early on, following that lead, but then had their gains pared back as Wall Street lost its early gains. The Dow opened up, I think it was around 340, 350 points, but that was the high water mark, and then it came back, gave up the whole thing, then rallied a bit again, but ended. Wall Street ended with modest declines of less than 1% for the Dow and S&P, but the NASDAQ was down a more hefty, NASDAQ composite down a more hefty 3.54%. Long-dated government bonds were quite weak against the background of rising stock markets. Those are long-dated government bond prices, of course. The U.S. dollar eased, but is fairly significantly off its lows that it had seen earlier in the day. Euro-dollar, for instance, currently 136.33, having been up to 137.69. Gold had a modest gain here today, currently 837.30.35. That's up 4.30 in after-hours trading. And modest gain in silver, but and also platinum here. Industrial metals were mixed, and So were soft commodities. Okay, well, crude oil was had quite a swing. Crude oil got up to 84.83, but then fell back to 79.24, where it's trading right now. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, we had the climactic activity in stock markets on Friday. The big bounce yesterday as people responded to the various rescue packages, the coordinated rescue packages that have actually been cobbled together in the last few days. And that has led to certainly a wave of short covering and perhaps some long buying as well, but these are still very nervous conditions, and everybody knows that the credit crisis isn't over. And although a lot of money is being pumped into the system and also into the banks specifically, that it's not yet sure what's going to happen with that money. In other words, whether the banks will be lending it or just sitting on it because they fear counterparty risks or more bad debts, and that's likely to lead to a little bit more volatility. Now, overall, I maintain that central banks have gone from being behind the curve to in front of the curve in terms of events. I also maintain that where they are taking substantial stakes in financial institutions, they will be pressing those same institutions to lend. I don't doubt that we will need further measures from central banks and treasuries, but having come this far, they're not likely to retreat in their efforts, say, to bring some stability back to the marketplace. A key indicator I maintain is the TED spread. And that came off today, I think it may have moved back below 4%, or it's back close to 4%, but it certainly needs to come back further. It needs to break the sequence of higher reaction lows. In other words, just like any other chart, it's gone up a long way. We need to see a clear downward break and into the uptrend consistency characteristics. That would be a good sign, and until that actually takes place, stock markets will face a strong headwind of uncertainty. But to weigh it all up, and I think the probability is that we've seen medium-term lows for most global stock markets, and where we haven't seen lows that were probably not far off them. I am assuming that the TED spread and similar indices will be coming down in the reasonably near future, and that would again indicate that confidence was returning. Some confidence was returning to the financial markets, and that banks were beginning to lend once again. Now, I'm just going to pause here for a little cough. Still trying to shake this head cold. Okay, now let's look at these long-dated government bonds, because they have fallen quite sharply, particularly the U.S. Treasury long bond. This has really been belted. Now, one of my contentions all along was that this was just a short-term so-called flight to safety, but it was very risky, and that the moment stock markets started to steady up, that we would see those bond markets weaken. Well, actually, we saw the bond markets start to weaken during the last days of the stock market sell-off to date. And no doubt part of that was because investors were getting a little bit twitchy about the vast quantities of money that were being pumped into the market, and they also knew that there was an immense amount of supply in terms of long-dated government bonds that was in the pipeline. I don't like these long-dated government bonds, but obviously when stock markets are on the ropes, and we've seen plenty of that recently, although it's probably over for a while, but when stock markets are on the ropes, and when the fear of a recession, let alone depression, is at its highest, then that will lead to a temporary flight into these long-dated bonds. But they don't represent value. The interest rates are too low. There's much too much supply. And you really do think that one really does have to think that we're going into an absolutely crunching depression to make those look remotely reasonable, in my opinion. And then I still wouldn't like them, because what would happen in a very difficult depression type of environment, which I do not expect, but in that type of environment, we would see governments just issuing a huge number of bonds. In other words, if the government can borrow long at cheap rates because people are frightened and it pushes rates down, well, they're certainly going to do just that, and they'd be foolish not to, given the budget deficits that we're likely to see, and current account deficits that many countries in the West will also see. So I don't like those bonds. I tend to regard them mostly as an indicator here in terms of what's going to well, as an indicator for stock markets. And for the most part, bonds take their cue from stock markets. But what would worry me would be if we saw a persistent continued deterioration, in other words, a lengthy rise in long-dated government bond yields. Now, that hasn't happened yet, of course. They're just giving back some of the recent gains, which had pushed yields for U.S. 10 years right down to their lows, down about 3.5%, just below. So it's not surprising that we're seeing a bounce in those yields. I do feel that over the next few years, we will see those long-dated government bonds move significantly higher. Maybe not over the next 12 months, but over Over the next 5 to 10 years, I do expect them to move significantly higher, and that will cause problems for stock markets. But that may we could easily see the next bull market. Yes, there will be another bull market in equities. There always is. And the more stock markets come down in a bear trend, the more certain you can be that the next significant move will be a bull market. And the question is just, or the questions are just, how much base formation is likely to take place before that occurs. That's a tough one to answer. It will vary from market to market. And the other question is where will the greatest leadership, where will the best leadership be? My feeling is that nothing moves up very much without having Wall Street at least steady. That's because of the Wall Street leash effect that I talked about, that I talk about so frequently. But when the TED spreads down and some confidence is recurring, and against the background of a steadier Wall Street, then I do expect the Asian emerging markets to lead the way on the upside, and China and India are good candidates to do that, as is Vietnam. What else to mention here? Crude oil, well, and many of these other commodities, they've been hit by two factors, which may not have played themselves out in the market. And one is reduced demand, particularly for industrial commodities. With foods, there's less scope for reduced demand. And also, some supply increases. So the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme is currently in reverse. My feeling, as I've said before, and said right from the beginning, that while we're big believers in the commodity super cycle and have for many years, really on the basis that the global population is absolutely enormous. Most of these people, these six, we're probably up to 6.6, 6.7 billion people, and the large population countries have all embraced capitalism. And not surprisingly, citizens in those countries have a high expectations and wish to join the middle classes, and many of them are, and their consumption of resources goes up as that happens, of course. So that's the main driver in terms of demand. And then we have the whole global infrastructure development theme as these economies modernize and urbanize. And that's going to continue. And I also maintain that the US administration will have a massive infrastructure redevelopment program to really help the economy out of recession. I expect the next administration to introduce that. So all this is going to is going to create demand for commodities. But as I said, I've said all along that the one factor that would derail the commodity super cycle temporarily, or for a while, would be a global recession. And that's what we've got. That doesn't mean that all economies are going to fall into recession. I don't think China will fall into recession. I don't think India will fall into recession. Most Asian countries will avoid it. I would expect Brazil to avoid it, and probably Russia. But they will certainly see slower growth. And I think the IMF's definition of a global recession is when we get GDP growth of no more than 3% per annum on average. Okay. And that would, of course, involve the weakest performance in the OECD countries. So we may see a little bit more deleveraging in terms of those commodity tracker funds. They were the last section of the market to really perform well. And then again, as I've just commented, the demand has eased back. Now, where these commodities end up is going to be extremely important. That, I think, was one of the more important plates in my PowerPoint that I posted yesterday. That was the PowerPoint for my speech at the 46th Annual Contrary Opinion Forum in Vermont at Basin Harbor. Now, what we can look for here is that I've said that with a crude oil price, well, if we got anywhere near the Goldman Sachs forecast, which we heard earlier in the year, they were talking about $200 before year end. Well, that's obviously off the table, and that would be ruinous. I think that would be global depression time, and I had been looking for retreat to the $100 to $80 level. We've certainly seen that. And global growth has slowed more than I had expected and continues to slow. As I said, following the trend, global growth, GDP growth, is still slowing. So we're really seeing crude oil now struggle to hold the $80 level. So, but basically, I've said that in the $100 to $80 level, the world can cope. There are other factors, such as the West's credit freeze, which have contributed to slower GDP growth as well. And we're still experiencing the after effects of the oil price spike and the food price spike. But I've also said that if we get oil in the $60 to $80 range, that will be quite good for the global economy. And I think we'll certainly see crude oil spend some time in that region. So really, factors leading to another global recovery phase and eventually increased demand for commodities are gradually falling into place. But right now we're still in a situation of shrinking demand for resources, and supply has increased in a number of instances. But as Owen points out in his commentary here today, that if prices for metals, for instance, fall too far, he's talking about industrial metals, and some of them have nickel, for instance, if people start to close marginal production. And we're certainly seeing some of that, so that will reduce the amount of supply, and prior to the next upward swing, in that sector. And I think that's pretty much it, except for currencies here. I think we see at least a short-term peak here in the U.S. dollar, and it may be a more important peak than that. I think that's at least a 50-50 possibility to say that we have recently seen a more important peak for the US dollar. But as long as it doesn't collapse back, that's not a problem for the global economy and for sentiment generally. And I think that's a wrap here for another day, so I'll just conclude as I usually do by saying all the very best to all of you.